Joining us now is Dr. Gary Aguilar. Dr. Aguilar is the head of the Division of Ophthalmology at San Francisco Memorial Hospital in San Francisco, California. He is an assistant clinical professor of ophthalmology at University of California, San Francisco, and a member of the Cato Institute. Dr. Aguilar has studied at length official deceptions in America and is here to join us today in our discussion of the media. Dr. Gary Aguilar, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
Could you explain how it is you got interested in official deception?
Well, perhaps one of the things that got me going was I developed an interest in the Kennedy case, and the Kennedy family was kind enough to give me access to the restricted Kennedy autopsy materials.
You're one of really only a handful of people, I understand, that have been allowed to see those materials.
A handful of doctors outside the government. There have been a number of people inside the government, but very few people outside the government.
Well, that's a subject that certainly fascinates Americans. Maybe you can come back on the future show and tell us some detail about that.
I would very much appreciate an invitation at some point to come back and talk about that, because that's an interesting subject in itself.
Would you just summarize it by saying that you have some doubts about the official version?
That would be the, you know, the least you could say about it.
Okay. Well, today's topic, as you know, you got interested in this, the subject of the media, and you recommended to me The Media Monopoly by Ben H. Bagdigian, a classic book in the field. Yeah, there was a part in the introduction that I was hoping that you might be able to go over for us.
Well, Ben Bagdigian is a far better writer than I am and an extemporaneous speaker. When the first edition of this book was published in 1983, 50 corporations dominated most every mass medium, and the biggest media merger in history was a $340 million deal. At that time, the strategy of most of the 50 biggest firms was to gain market domination in one medium, to have the largest market share solely in newspapers, for example, or in magazines, or broadcasting, or books, or movies, but not in all of them. By the time the second edition was published in 1987, the 50 companies had shrunk to 29. By the third edition in 1990, the 29 had shrunk to 23. By the fourth edition, to 14. By the fifth edition in 1997, the biggest firms numbered 10 and involved the $19 billion Disney ABC deal. But the biggest of 1983, worth $340 million, would give way 17 years later to AOL Time Warner's $350 billion merged corporation, more than 1,000 times larger.
Here's Bagdigian back in 83, warning, and he got quite a bit of publicity. I remember at the time that this book attracted notice. He was warning that 50 corporations were controlling most of the media in the United States, and he thought that to be dangerous. And as you read this and we see what he's describing, edition after edition, it has gotten much worse.
Six firms dominate all American mass media. Each is a subsidiary of a larger parent firm, some of them basically operating in other industries. The six parent firms are General Electric, Viacom, Disney, Bertelsmann, Time Warner, and Murdoch's News Corp. All the parent firms are listed in the Fortune magazine's 1999 Global 500 as the largest corporations in the world.
But these big six actually control far more of the media than his 50 did back in 1983, and they control more than the next 20 on the list.
Yeah, and again, it's not just controlling one aspect of the media, say newspapers or a television station or a magazine or a publishing house. They are now vertically integrated so that they own from essentially soup to nuts. They have publishing empires that publish books and magazines and a media wing that manages television stations and even involved in advertising and that sort of thing. And of course, they have huge ownerships of newspapers and that sort of thing. So that, with his group, you end up having all access basically controlled from a single source. And I think that this is a subject which is important for people on both the left and right side of the political spectrum.
Well, I think regardless of how you may classify yourself in terms, of overall philosophy, it seems quite clear to me that you and Michael Perini, having spoken to both of you, have see this pretty much the same way.
This is a problem for both people of any political stripe who want an open and vigorous political discussion, because when you have very few voices that are speaking, you're going to have a great narrowing of the amount of opinion you're going to have access to. And particularly in a situation here, my concern, perhaps more than Michael Parenti's, is the control of the government in terms of what comes out through the media. But there is sort of a fusion, if you will, of interests. And perhaps Michael Parenti would be right to say that the power and financial power of corporations has an undue influence on government, but there are other influences which are quite powerful. And he may look to leftist sources about the problems of the media. I can look to a very good book by the Cato Institute's Ted Galen Carpenter called The Captive Press. And he relates a fascinating story about how through the New York Times knew that the administration had denied that the U-2 spy incident had been an American operation. It was a lie that it knowingly passed along to please the CIA chief, Alan Dulles. The Times publisher at the time, Sulzberger, killed the story telling the truth. And so the newspaper of record published an editorial supporting the government's lie and then joined the government in a disinformation campaign that fooled nobody but the Americans.
Well, I think it might be good for our listeners to run through Bogdigian's top six. And helping me do that is Project Censored. Censored 2003 has an excellent chapter on the 10 media giants. The numbers they come up with are slightly different than Bogdigian because it's very confusing. These are large corporations. It's hard to separate where their money comes from in media and outside the media. General Electric, for example, number six on the list, is a gigantic corporation. It's not only involved in television, we know it as NBC, but it's also involved as, you know, major defense products, electronics, insurance, loans, credit applications, collections, you know, incredible light bulbs, communication satellites. It's a huge multinational corporation.
And as Bogdigian says, they have what some people would refer to as interlocking directorships, where they have members of one board of directors sitting on the other boards of directors, and they have huge investments in one another's ventures and corporate stock are held in common. It's clear that they have many of the same interests.
I don't know that you know, necessarily we need to go in detail on all this, but I think it might be good just to go through them one by one and give you an idea of the scope of what we're talking about. So first of all, number six on the list, General Electric. TV. NBC, MSNBC, CNBC. It involves TV production of NBC Productions, Radio City Television. We've mentioned the large other that's involved with General Electric, another of things from aircraft engines, et cetera. But it also owns 40% of MSNBC. It owns the New York Knicks, the New York Rangers. It owns actually 3% of World Wrestling Federation Entertainment, which I was unaware of. Next on the list, number five, Bertelsmann. It's 36% of their income comes from Germany, 24% from the U.S. They are Europe's biggest broadcaster, and in America, we know them primarily as a book publisher. They own Random House, Knopf, Vintage, Dell, Bantam, Doubleday magazines, one of the largest in the U.S. as well, Family Circle, Parents, McCall's. On the internet, they own a stake of a large number of firms. They have 200 music labels, including RCA, which surprised me. I guess General Electric sold it off. Arista, Windham Hill, accounting for 20% of U.S. sales. So they're very, very big. News Corporation, I think, is one we need to, you know, we're fond of sort of hitting. Fox and Fox News. Now, was it you telling me that Eric Idle says that the thing he likes most about American television comedy is Fox News?
I've heard that comment. I think I may not have told you that. I think I also heard that independently.
Well, yes, indeed. Cable satellite operations all over Asia, Europe, Latin America, and the United States. They, of course, purchased 20th Century Fox. They have 20th Century Fox movies as well. In books, they're HarperCollins. We mentioned on our program, I don't know whether you heard the program a few weeks ago, on the web, perhaps. I know you do like to tune into the web from time to time.
I certainly do.
That Clarence Thomas, of course, has been made a millionaire by Rupert Murdoch by a book advance through HarperCollins. Zondervan, I guess it's pronounced, is the number one commercial Bible publisher in the world. This is also part of the News Corporation. TV Guide, Weekly Standard, a British publication, British magazine, is Murdoch. He moved into, out of Australia. Yes, he inherited a paper in Australia, then in the 60s moved into the British market in a big way and has become quite a prominent force in the 1980s in the United States. He owns the New York Post newspaper, The Sun in Britain, The Australian in Australia, also the New York Knicks, the New York Rangers, the Los Angeles Dodgers, Madison Square Garden, Staples Center in Los Angeles, and Dodger Stadium. To their credit, we'll say one thing about Fox. They never pretend that they're, you know, balanced in their presentation of the news. What they just say is that, you know, we're giving the other side to balance everybody else off. Dr. Prini pointed out in one of his articles that there's a study that's been done, even of like National Public Radio, which is, you know, certainly about as left as you're perhaps going to find among major news outlets. When they put a conservative on the air, he's frequently solo. When they put a liberal on the air, they seem to often have a conservative to balance him off. Now, if that's the case, I've seen a number of studies on this in other media outlets, and this does seem to be the trend. And I think this is because these large corporations are interested in putting forth viewpoints that they find friendly.
Now, PBS itself has often been thought of as being entirely independent because it doesn't have any advertisers, that sort of thing. But it does, and it does have some major sources of funding, one of them being Archer Daniels Midland. Archer Daniels Midland has been credibly accused of toxics violations and has had to pay penalties and has been under some serious scrutiny, and yet you'll never hear anything about that on PBS.
Well, let's move up the list. Number three. Viacom Inc. Back in 1994, CEO Sumner Redstone apparently went out and acquired Paramount and Blockbuster, the video rental outlet. There was a merger between CBS and Westinghouse before that. It's all been bought up by Viacom. You know Viacom as CBS. You know it as MTV. You know it as Nickelodeon. You know it as VH1. TV production, CBS Enterprises, Paramount, Spelling. On the internet, MTV.com, VH1.com. On the radio, Viacom is 184 Infinity stations. It's the CBS radio network. In books, it's Simon & Schuster, it's Pocket Books, it's Scribner's, it's Macmillan. Movies, Paramount Pictures. It has exclusive ad rights on buses, billboards, kiosks, trains, and over 90 cities in America. And we mentioned on last week's program that Viacom was apparently not going to sell some anti-war messages to people that had the money and were ready, willing, and able to put them up.
You know, Viacom knows full well that if it, you know, stakes a firm position against the government, it has myriad licenses that have to be approved on and reapproved on an ongoing basis as years go by. And they know that they, you know, will have no problem from the federales if they play ball.
Yeah.
And this is the great concern that I have. The fact that you're getting a large corporation like this refusing to run paid advertising can only be seen as sort of a sop to the federales that have staked out a position against what those dissidents would have you hear.
Well, number two, Disney, and we should sort of reiterate that back in 1997, when Disney moved out of theme parks and into film and TV, it purchased Capital Cities ABC, $19 billion. At that time, the largest media merger in history. This was eclipsed when Viacom bought Westinghouse CBS just a couple years later for $34 billion. And of course, you know, 2 years after that, this is upped by a factor of 10 when AOL purchases Time Warner. But Disney, we think of as theme parks, but Disney is ABC, the Disney Channel, ESPN. It owns 3/8 stake of A&E, History and Biography channels. In TV production, it's Touchstone Pictures, Buena Vista, ABC News, ABC Entertainment, and Walt Disney. In radio, ABC Radio Network, over 50 stations it owns outright. It's Radio Disney, 80% of ESPN Radio. It just goes on and on. Magazines, Discover. It owns Touchstone Pictures, Walt Disney Pictures, Miramax Film Corporation, also the Anaheim Angels and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. I mean, this is $25 billion in revenue every year just from media.
It is lucky in one sense that we've had the internet. For however long, there is relatively free access to it, and you can get information from anywhere in the world, and I assume that's going to continue. I have no reason to suspect it would not. But for a lot of stories, I get much better reporting about what goes on in the United States by reading the British press, for example, or even the French press, which you can read in English. You can read Le Monde in English. You can also read, I like the Irish Times actually has some pretty good stories, and you can go right up on the web and read it online, and you'll find stories about the United States that are just not published here.
Greg Palast is actually from the Bay Area, but when he wanted to publish his expose about Campaign 2000, he had to go over to London, where he lives and works today. A lot of stories that can't seem to see the light of day in the U.S. Do get published overseas, and I would certainly second your motion that it's a good idea, sometimes if you can, to get your hands on foreign writings to see what the foreign press is saying about America. A lot of times you find stories there that surprise you. Let's address the 500-pound gorilla. Of the media, AOL, Time Warner. When Time Warner merged back in 1989, I think that was the largest merger at that time, when they added Turner Broadcasting in 1996. In 2001, when AOL moved into this, you know, what amazes me about the story, Gary, is that a lot of people were asking, is this a good idea? I mean, a few people were asking, is this a good idea? And the media sort of gave this, treated it with kid gloves. And AOL now controls Time Warner, the largest media corporation in the world. You know them on television as CNN, also TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, Turner Classic Movies, second highest provider of cable in the U.S. after AT&T. On the internet, they're AOL, they're CompuServe, they're Netscape. Books, Time Life, Little, Brown, Warner Brothers, Book of the Month, magazines, Time, People, Life, Mad Magazine, DC Comics, Sports Illustrated, all part of AOL Time Warner. There are 40 labels in music, including Warner Brothers, Atlantic, Elektra, and Rhino. In movies, they're Warner Brothers, the MGM Library. They also own RKO's Library. Numerous theme parks, the Atlanta Braves, the Atlanta Hawks, the Goodwill Games, and 150 Warner Brothers stores. We have to keep in mind that a company this big, all corporations are going to, you know, look out for their interests and to make sure that, you know, they can minimize bad publicity. At this point, when you have corporations like AOL, Time Warner, like Disney, like Viacom, like the News Corporation, Bertelsmann, RCA, they are so far flung in their enterprises that the number of activities which they may want to see the news slanted on is really mind-boggling.
You know, absolutely.
Well, we're about out of time, Dr. Aguilar, but I do see some hope. I'm going to read a little closing portion from Begdegian, which I think can give us all hope. But one of the first things I would look for is that, you know, invoking the ghost of Teddy Roosevelt. There's talk of breaking up Time Warner AOL, sort of falling apart on its own of its own weight. That might be a good thing, and perhaps in the future we should galvanize our federal agencies into perhaps, you know, not allowing all this vertical integration and consolidation that's been going on.
We should try to have some optimism, and I think there is some reason for optimism, if only because I think the internet has the potential, if people are willing to use it, to provide an access to information that can't be so easily controlled by big business and big government in the United States. And, you know, a good expression and proof of that is the organizing that's gone on to try to prevent the war in the Middle East.
Well, Dr. Gary Aguilar, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been great fun.
Well, there is some cause for optimism, and to that end, I would quote again from the media monopoly as follows. Commercial radio has become mainly a set of about a half dozen fixed formulas heard uniformly throughout the country. That's one reason why the number of households tuning into stations financed by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting has doubled in the last 5 years. The largest non-commercial radio, National Public Radio, has 700 stations broadcasting NPR programs during most of their broadcast day. In addition, there are growing informal networks of alternative radio stations and individual broadcasters who create networks by mailings to hundreds of stations. Non-commercial television and radio continue to endure despite congressional hostility, suspicion, and niggardly federal appropriations. Though the non-commercial stations have far smaller audiences than the large commercial broadcasters, their collective audiences can still raise ratings enough to cause commercial stations to lust after them. Even more important than their audience size is the fact that the content of non-commercial broadcasts reminds the public that there are interesting, non-stereotyped, and often superior programs seldom heard or seen in the mainstream commercial airwaves. Furthermore, the major non-commercial stations draw some of the most desirable audience in terms of average income, education, and influence. And isn't that what we're all about here at KDVS, a non-commercial, community-based radio station that seeks to keep you informed about what's going on in the world? We hope that we provided you with some interesting listening tonight with our special guests, Dr. Michael Perrini and Dr. Gary Aguilar. If you're interested in Dr. Perrini's work, and I hope that you are, you can go to his website for more information, which is, again, at www.michaelperrenti.org. Stay tuned for Todd Urich and his show, Hometown Atrocities. Todd will be bringing you more of the kind of programming that you're not going to find on major commercial stations. I think KDVS can be justifiably proud of the kind of programming it brings you, and that it's unusual, it's different, it's not the run-of-the-mill sort of stuff. And that certainly, I think, is true about Todd's show. So stay tuned for that. You've been listening to Radio Parallax here on KDVS 90.3. I'm Douglas Everett, and we hope that we'll see you again next Thursday.